Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, St. Paul, of course, tells us to think about these things. Can't argue with that. But let's talk about them, too. That is what we do on Call Me Catholic. I'm Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times so we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. As always, I'm joined in the studio by my first-class engineer and chief fact-checker, Jimmy G. He's wide awake.
Do we have to say that every day? You can call me. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. We can call you Catholic? You bet.
Do I have to just wake up and be all bright and chipper?
Yeah. Well, you know what? You should be, because it's baseball season.
That's right.
So you have two reasons to wake up and be happy, because you're a Catholic baseball fan, and Jimmy never sleeps during baseball season.
And my team won yesterday. Yeah.
Ooh, the Dodgers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Congratulations.
They have an exciting young rookie who's really lighting it up.
What's his name?
Cody Bellinger.
Okay, Cody Bellinger, yeah. Go get him. Well, they had a real nail biter the other night with the Giants.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, went into the 12th inning or something like that.
Those crazy Giants. We love them.
We like to be hospitable. Hey, Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County, California. And speaking of baseball, which we just were, we are in the shadow of the big red A that marks Angel Stadium. They're our neighbors. We can hear Mike Trout hitting one out of the ballpark.
And the crowd going crazy?
All the time. We've also got Disneyland right down the street, so we're in fine company here in the Diocese of Orange. And Christ Cathedral, of course, formerly the Crystal Cathedral, is an attraction in its own right, 34 acres with gorgeous art, stunning buildings, lovely grounds, to say nothing of the Call Me Catholic studio.
That's right.
Well, it's actually the OC Catholic studio. OC Catholic co-produces the show with EWTN, but we just occupy it for an hour on Saturday.
You know, what would be interesting would be for a visitor to come to this campus, the OC Catholic Studio, do we rank in the top 50 of places they want to see on campus?
I would think so.
Would we crack the top 50?
But we're kind of locked up, so you can't get in unless we're in here.
That's right.
Yeah, well, anyway, come visit us. There's lots to see. And if we're home in the studio, we'll welcome you into
exactly.
our studio audience.
Yeah, top 20.
If you would like to kind of see where we are without actually visiting us, you can go to our Facebook page. Facebook.com/callmecatholic. And Marvelous Matt, our call screener, actually puts up a link at the beginning of the show, which he's doing right now, that will enable you to watch a live stream of the show.
That's right.
You can see our studio. You can see our studio guests. You can see the back of Jimmy G's head. You can watch us as we have some fun in Studio A, the OC Catholic Radio Studio.
That's right.
Call Me Catholic. Yeah, so check it out. It's kind of a fun new feature that we have. But if you are in the car, don't try that in the car.
If you're by your PC, you're kicking back at home, open up the laptop, you can watch the stream.
Yeah, watch the stream. I've heard people really enjoy that. So
yeah.
That's kind of fun. So here we are in May, Jimmy G. Everybody loves May. It's really a very poetic month. The wicked weather, for the most part, is behind us. Things are springing forth from the earth. It's the season of first communions and graduations and confirmations, right? Linen dresses and fresh breezes. Now, if I'm not describing anything in your life or surroundings right now, well, give it a few days. It'll come around. And perhaps all this lovely imagery is why we Catholics devote the month of May to Mary.
Mm.
Because it reminds us of all that is good and pure and fresh and hopeful. We don't just give her a day in May. We give her the whole month of May. And we're also going to give our Blessed Mother our whole show today. Call Me Catholic is dedicated to Mary today because she is our mother. She's everybody's mother. And because she cares for us, she cares about us day in and day out without fail, interceding for us in even the tiniest details of our life.
Amen.
And our guests today have some wonderfully explicit knowledge of how we can celebrate Mary through our gardens.
Mm.
I mean, we always associate Mary with beautiful flowers, lovely gardens, that kind of imagery. And actually, our own yards can pay tribute to her through that. The Mary Garden has a unique history and a very specific nature. Maybe some of you have a Mary Garden in your own backyard. Hmm. Or maybe you have one at your parish church, your parish grounds. Mike Kirsch is a respected horticulturist and landscaper here in Southern California, and he loves to promote and discuss the concept of Mary Gardens. So he'll join us in a minute to share some of the history and nature of the Mary Garden. It's got quite a rich history and quite a bit of detail that it goes into composing an authentic Mary Garden. And then we'll talk with Katie Kelly, who is the communication and outreach librarian for the University of Dayton, where they're featuring, right now they're featuring an expansive Mary Garden model, a fantastic exhibit in their Marion Library there at the University of Dayton. And it's going to be on exhibit through May 10th. So there's still time to catch that if you're in the Dayton, Ohio area.
Dayton, Ohio.
Katie will tell us more about this fantastic exhibit that's growing live inside their campus library. And then finally, in chatting with Catholics, I take my microphone to choir practice at Our Lady Queen of Angels Parish in Newport Beach. And I ask the choir members what their favorite Marion hymn or work of music is.
Right.
Musical work.
Well, music is art. Yeah.
Well, when I actually addressed this to the choir director, she said, are we limited to just hymns? And I thought, oh, there's so many ways you can describe music. Hymns
right.
is just one type. Okay. But first up, it's our Call Me Catholic Countdown, which this week will be my top five favorite titles given to our Blessed Mother. Now, you know, there are literally hundreds of titles given to Mary. And yet, even with these hundreds of titles, it still comes up short of adequately expressing the breadth and depth of our Blessed Mother's role in our salvation. Clearly, some have more significance and importance than others. Ones that come directly from Scripture, for example, or are used in our church liturgy. They're given more rank, so to speak. They might be given more importance. But as with the titles of endearment that we give our own earthly mothers, some of the names that we use just evoke a kind of real personal tenderness or intimacy that nurtures our dialogue and devotion to Mary. So with that in mind, here are my top five favorite Marian titles, our Call Me Catholic Countdown of the week.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
You know, I keep begging Jimmy for an alternate announcement of the Call Me Catholic Countdown when we're not doing a jazzy countdown.
We're actually working on that.
Oh, good.
We're going to get a couple new versions soon. You heard it here.
Did I drop enough hints?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. You're always on the job, Jimmy G. Okay, so number five, we start from the bottom and go up, would be Mary, Mother of the Church. Now, that may sound kind of banal, sort of ordinary, but really, it's very, very critical in Mary's role in our church and in our salvation. She was with the apostles in the upper room, praying with them after Jesus' death and resurrection when the Holy Spirit descended upon them and gave birth to the new church. So she is the mother of our church. Mm. And you know that each member of the body of Christ is a part of her son. And she wraps us in her mantle and protects us from evil. And when we are worried about our church in modern times, the fading of our church liturgy, the fading of the zeal of the parishioners, the congregation, we put that in Mary's hands because she wants the church to be strong and vibrant more than any of us can even imagine.
So well said.
We give that to her. Okay. Number four would be Mary's title as Mystical Rose. Now, roses have always been part of Mary's imagery by her own choice. You know, when Mary appeared to Juan Diego, I mean, it was the roses. It was the Castilian roses that she wanted him to collect in his tilma and present to the bishop. When in many of the Marian apparitions, she is adorned with roses.
Right.
And the rose is considered the grandest of the flowers, the most dramatic and the most profound in the garden. And so we attribute that image to Mary. Number three would be one called Undoer of Knots. Now, I like this. This has enjoyed a certain resurgence of popularity. It's actually been around since the 17th century. And I think at that time it was called Mother of Unfailing Help. But I like Undoer of Knots because when I was a little girl, I used to go to my mom when my shoelaces were in an unrelenting knot, or my chains, my metal chains would get in a knot. And my mother would very patiently take out a pin and just nestle them apart, and then she'd hand me back the unknotted shoelace or the unknotted chain or ribbon. And I think that's a mother's patience, and I think that's a mother's desire to sort of simplify our life. And I think Mary is a really great source for that unraveling of the knots we tie ourselves into. It happens to be a favorite devotion of Pope Francis, too. Mary, Undoer of Knots. Okay, so my number two would be Mary, Most Sorrowful, because when you think about all the things that Mary suffered in her lifetime, especially during Jesus' passion, we know that there's nothing that we will experience in life that will that she cannot relate to in terms of suffering, in terms of pain and trials and tribulations. So we turned it all over to Our Lady's, who had many, many sorrows in her life, and she was a model of faithfulness during all that. And number one would be Mary, Queen of Angels. That is just the image I most gravitate to when I am considering Mary in heaven. There's a beautiful painting by William Bergerot. I think his name is Bergerot, and it's the Virgin with angels, and she is seated in heaven like on a feather bed of clouds, and she's clothed in the sun with a crown of stars, and these beautiful elegant angels are all just sort of looking at her and just paying homage to her.
Right,
and
right.
It's just an image that I love as the Queen of Heaven, the Queen of Angels. And we raised our children at a parish called Our Lady Queen of Angels.
That's right.
Parish. So those are my top five. I know you all have your very favorite titles with which you address the Virgin Mary. And isn't it wonderful that we have so many options that complement all the trials and yearnings of our heart? Okay, you can share your favorite name for Mary on our Facebook page. That would be a wonderful contribution to our content. To the quality of our content. Yeah, we have pictures and previews and all kinds of things. But we'd love to have your comments. We'd love to have your like. So you can share your favorite name for Mary on our Facebook page. And just go to Facebook.com/CallMeCatholic and give us a like. Or you can send us an email to callmecatholic@ewtn.com. But do stay...
Can they send us a snail mail?
Well, no. Actually, no.
We have no direct address.
There's no direct mailing address.
You can call us.
You can call us at 714-282-6034. You can call us with your questions and comments during the show or after the show. But do stay tuned right now because we are going to teach you a lot about Mary Gardens. Our first guest, Mike Kirsch, is a respected horticulturalist and landscape designer in Southern California. He has his own Mary Garden, and we'll talk about the history and nature of this special Marian devotion in just a minute. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, on this first Saturday in the month of May. Two reasons why, right there, to keep Mary, our Blessed Mother, in the forefront of our thoughts. First Saturdays and the month of May. She implored that we keep the first Saturdays of the month holy in one of her messages to the children of Fatima. And of course, that 100th celebration is coming up this month.
Mm.
And of course, May is the month in which we honor Mary every day. The affection for and devotion to the Mother of God is one of those things that we express through many different devotions during this month. But the use of flowers as both an offering to Mary and an adornment for her, the way we crown and dress her image with beautiful flowers, is probably one of the oldest traditions in the Catholic Church. But did you know that flowers are also a way that we can teach and perpetuate the story of Mary's life? The Mary Garden can be traced back to the 7th century. This is the art of designing a garden with the exclusive purpose of honoring the Blessed Mother through carefully selected flowers and plants. Our guest today has a Mary Garden in his yard, and he knows a few things about plants and flowers. Mike Kirsch is an award-winning landscaper and horticulturist. Is it horticulturalist or horticulturist?
Horticulturist.
Okay, thank you. That's right from the horse's mouth right there in Southern California. He's passionate about his craft and gravitates towards cottage-styled gardens with lots of color, especially from roses, daylilies, hydrangeas, bulbs, heirloom plants, etc., and the inclusion of a Mary Garden in everyone's yard. Mike Kirsch, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you, Peggy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, so boy, as a Southern California landscaper, you must have welcomed the rain this last winter.
Like you wouldn't believe. It was so sorely needed.
Yeah,
and we're seeing the fruits of it right now with everything just exploding.
Including everyone's allergies.
Yeah.
So Mike, gardens have a pretty prominent place in Bible settings. There's Eden, the first garden. Then there's the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus began his passion. And then there's the garden where the tomb was hewn out of the rock. And Jesus even appeared to Mary Magdalene as a gardener. So you've chosen a very noble profession.
I like to think so.
How were you drawn to this work?
Just growing things was always a fascination for me, especially since the sister who taught me in first grade was just all about plants. She had everything you can imagine growing in our little classroom, and as well as fish and animals.
That's cool.
Drawn to it.
Isn't it interesting that in those early elementary school years, all those things that, that teachers try to expose you to, some of them really do, if you'll pardon the expression, plant a seed. So, Mike, I'm going to get to your Mary Garden, but what was your first exposure to the traditional Mary Garden?
Probably the one that was in the convent at the school that I attended. Of course, back then the convent was enclosed, had a big wall around it, and if you were one of those incorrigible kids that had to go in there and, you know, for some infraction you'd committed during the day. It was actually good because when you got in there, you got to see this little grotto that the sisters had made. I think that one, it was made of lava rock, and it had a statue of Our Lady and a little pond in front of it with tadpoles and just this incredible array of flowers that I had never seen before because we just lived in a little 50s tract out with grass in the backyard. And I just remember being captivated by all this color. And
well, what, see, right there, Our Lady was beginning to console you. You were a naughty little grade school boy, and you got banished to the sister's house for punishment, and you were consoled by Our Lady's image right there.
Right.
And that's what these gardens actually do. How far back can we date these Mary gardens?
I think to the 5th and 6th centuries, possibly even earlier. I'm not for sure exactly. I can't pinpoint.
I think I remember reading that St. Fiacre, who is an Irish saint, was one of the first ones who decided, okay, I'm going to put a statue of Mary here and I'm going to go out and select plants that reflect her life and maybe some of the biblical stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so people over the years have adopted, some people just put a Mary statue and then some plants around it, but there's actually more to the design of a of an authentic Mary garden than just a selection of pretty plants.
Right. There's no real hard and fast rules that you have to adhere to. But historically, if you look back, there's common plants and flowers that are used across the world that depict various aspects of Our Lady that are used when creating one of these Mary gardens.
Well, you don't necessarily have to have a large yard to
right.
do these either. So,
exactly.
So what would be an example of how someone could do this on a patio or a deck or a windowsill?
Just whatever is in proportionate to the space that you have. If you have pretty decent sized yard, you could get a 3/4 life-size image. Our Lady, if you just have a windowsill in your kitchen, you could just get a small, 6 or 8 inch figurine of Our Lady. Just whatever you've got the space for, as long as you do it, that's the important thing.
Right.
It doesn't have to be some super elaborate thing with waterfalls and all that kind of stuff.
I think the most elaborate one in our country is at the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. And I think they did that a number of years ago, but it's quite expansive. It's in the grounds, and it features every season something is blooming around
right.
Mary. But the original, some of the origin of it is that I loved the stories of how some of these plants and flowers were given names that had religious orientation. And I think it's because these early rural Christians, they're walking down the road. They don't know the Latin name for these things. So they use their imagery, their religious knowledge to sort of say, oh, these look like they would be teardrops from Mary's eyes. Or these look like they would be the little thing, Jesus' fingers. I don't know. Is there a plant called Jesus' fingers?
That one I haven't heard of. But what you just said about Mary's tears, commonly known as Lily of the Valley, the tears that she shed at the foot of the cross as Christ was being crucified. This is one example of
something that would be. So they have an English name, a Latin name, and almost so many of these plants and flowers have religious names. Now, I also learned that the oldest Mary garden in the country is on Cape Cod.
Oh,
and,
that's right, in Massachusetts, yes.
Yeah. And it was in 1932, this woman brought the practice of the Mary Garden here to the United States. She was a convert, and she decided that she had heard about this European practice and decided she wanted to do it at her chapel, which was called St. Joseph's, and it's still there, although it's not a practicing parish. It's part of the larger parish of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton there.
They combined, I think.
They combined it, yeah. But so, Mike, in your what does your Mary Garden look like?
My Mary Garden is primarily, she's on a pedestal surrounded by climbing roses. I have an ironwork behind the statue that climbing roses grow up on. There's 3 or 4 different colors of them. At the feet of the statue, I've got daylilies. I can't normally grow the Madonna lily because they only bloom once a year and they don't like the Southern California heat.
Well, right. We can't grow everything in Southern California like they can in the South.
So you make exceptions and you do the next best thing if you can't get the prime thing you want. Daylilies, hydrangeas, roses. And then in the spring, I have daffodil bulbs and stuff that come up. another really pretty blue hyacinthoides. It's like a little blue bell that hangs down. I have those at the Virgin Mary's feet.
Oh, lovely.
Which bloom pretty much just for 2 or 3 weeks in like late March, early April. Probably one of the only things that's showing any color at that time of the year.
Well, Mike, you have done, I know that your yard, and you're a very respected landscaper in Southern California, but your home itself has been on garden tours.
Correct.
So, and won awards. So how do people that are not Catholic respond to such a prominent feature in your garden?
The response is actually amazing, because I've done this garden tour 7 or 8 times already, and several non-Catholics will come up and comment, you know, I'm not a Catholic, but this is so inspirational, what you've done here.
Isn't that lovely?
It's such a nice tribute to the Virgin Mary, and it's so peaceful, and it just, you can tell they get a feeling of warmth.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people put Buddhas and little sprites in their garden. I mean, why not have the real deal in there?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so you're finding it's been received favorably.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
That's lovely. Yeah. You know, I wanted to share this beautiful quote that I know most of our Catholics are familiar with in general, but it's from Thérèse of Lisieux, who we call the little flower. And she said, "The splendor of the rose and the whiteness of the lily do not rob the little violet of its scent, nor the daisy of its simple charm. If every tiny flower wanted to be a rose, spring would lose its loveliness." And I love that concept both in life and in as garden as a metaphor for life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it actually probably has aesthetic value when you look at when you're planting a garden. You can't have just roses and birds of paradise and these big grand flowers everywhere. You have to have the whole complex design.
From the demure to the big, flashy, you know, hybridized roses.
Yeah.
You know, everything that shows beauty in its simplest form all the way up to something totally exotic. Our Lady encompasses all those traits.
Well, and even herbs.
Yes.
I was going to say, you know, if you wanted to do something simple on your own accord in a small space, herbs would be very helpful because you could do a little pot. Because look at lavender has great spiritual significance. Look at, there is an herb that's called something. There's
rosemary.
Rosemary. There we go. That's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, mm-hmm. Rosemary. And those are all very, they resonate with our Marian devotions. And you know, don't you think these are great teaching tools too, Mike? They're
yes.
not just simply a devotional practice. They're actually instruments of instruction that we can use to teach our children and grandchildren.
Yes, especially when you consider like the different flowers that come on either herbs or flowers, their color and how they relate to our devotion to Our Lady, especially the color blue.
Yeah. Well, here, I'm going to throw out a few religious names and see if you can actually identify the common name of the flower. Okay, what about Mary's crown?
Would that be the lychnis coronaria?
I have bachelor buttons.
Oh, okay.
Okay. How about Madonna's eyes?
Ooh, you're stumping me.
Okay. Well, but I mean, what would come to mind? Does anything come to mind?
Something small and blue.
What about bluettes? Bluettes? Does that some? That might be something that the East Coast has that we
right.
don't have. Okay. How about St. Joseph's lily?
Would that be the Madonna lily,
the traditional
Easter lily? Or
no, that's this one I have down is the day lily. St. Joseph's staff is the calla lily.
Okay.
As Catherine Hepburn said, the calla lilies are in bloom again.
Really, they
are. Okay. Okay, here's a good one. What about Mary's thorn?
Again, here we go with different cultures giving
yeah.
different names for things.
The dog
I'm failing miserably here.
The dog.
I should have the Jeopardy
rose.
Music playing.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know what? We like to stump our guests. Hey, horticulturalist and Mary Garden specialist Mike Kirsch is going to stay with us. We're not going to stump him anymore, though. When we return, we're going to have a conversation with Katie Kelly, who is the communication and outreach librarian for the Marian Library at the University of Dayton. And they are featuring a stunning Mary Garden exhibit right now inside their library building. So stay tuned for more on our mini little Mary Garden tutorial. And if you want to join the conversation, the number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Yeah. Hello, this is Bishop Robert Baker from the Diocese of Birmingham in Alabama.
I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
Hello, friends. This is Father Wade Menezes of the Fathers of Mercy. Thanks for listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hi there, celebrants of the month of May, which is Mary's month. I am Peggy Normandin, host of Call Me Catholic, and today we are exploring the glorious and fragrant practice of planting and sustaining a Mary garden, a rich and rewarding way to honor our Blessed Mother, not just this month, but all year long. Horticulturalist Mike Kirsch has been sharing some of the history and components of a Mary garden, and he's going to join me in welcoming our next guest. Katie Kelly is the communication and outreach librarian for the University of Dayton's Marian Library. Now, this is the largest repository of Marian research and documentation in the world. I was stunned to learn that we have this resource in the country. And since March 25th, the library has had on exhibit a live Mary garden inside the library. And the exhibit is closing May 10th, so we are grateful to talk to Katie Kelly while the exhibit is still on display. Katie Kelly, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hi, Peggy. Thank you for having me on. Hi, Mike.
Hey, listen, this is so cool what you guys are doing within the library. First of all, describe the Marian Library physically and sort of its contents to our listeners, Katie.
Of course. The Marian Library is the world's largest collection of materials on the Blessed Virgin Mary. It's located on the seventh floor of the main library on the University of Dayton campus. And the mission of the Marian Library, put simply, is to make Mary better known, loved, and served. So we have rare books, we have lots of materials, journals, and experts, of course, on hand. And one of our prize collections is the John Stokes and Mary Garden Collection, which inspired this Living Indoor Garden exhibit.
And it's just for these 3 months, March, April, and May. So, and I also want to point out that the University of Dayton is a Catholic university that is run by the Marianist priests. So now we have a little background on why the emphasis, blessedly, the emphasis on Mary. So, Katie Kelly, tell us about this Mary Garden exhibit that's living inside the library.
Yes, so it was inspired again by that John Stokes and Mary Garden collection. John Stokes Jr. was a passionate advocate of Mary Gardens. In the 1950s, he really started researching the medieval tradition and reinvented it for American audiences. So this living indoor garden was created by a local landscaping company owned by a University of Dayton alum, and it was created using plans and plant lists from this collection, from this research by Stokes, and it's actually all available on our website, which, may I share it?
Yes, please do share it.
It's go.udayton.edu/Mary's Gardens, and you can find plant lists, information about symbolism of Marian flowers, and you can also find garden guides and garden plans, even for a garden such as dish gardens. So I heard early in the show you were talking about windowsills.
Right.
Smaller places. Stokes really wanted everyone to be able to make their own Mary garden, no matter the space that they had.
So, Katie, the actual physical space that you've dedicated to the Mary garden that's on exhibit right now, it
yes.
is a full floor of plants with the Marian statue in the middle. But you have also gone to the trouble to change it up four times so that it represents the four different seasons of the year with different plant life in each season.
Yes, each season, each time they have changed out the flowers, it's been beautiful. So our living indoor garden has a cross-shaped pathway with a Mary statue in the middle. So as soon as you look at the garden, right up front is the Mary statue, and there have been lots of seasonal plants throughout the exhibition. So we started off with tulips in the spring, which symbolize Mary's prayer, and then we did begonias for summers, which is Star of Bethlehem. And for fall, we did chrysanthemums, so mums, and that means the All Saints flower. And then currently we have winter flowers, which are calanchos, and that, of course, stands for a Christmas-type flower.
Oh.
So it's beautiful, and we have had over 7,000 visitors to our gallery space to see the living indoor garden, and it's just been fabulous.
So which of those seasons did you really favor, Katie? You helped curate this exhibit, so you must have a favorite season that you really loved, either aesthetically or from its symbolic standpoint.
I think aesthetically, I really like the summer. We had these beautiful hyacinths, and it smelled so good.
Oh.
So as soon as you walked in the library, you could smell the beautiful flowers, and it really made a difference, you know, coming to work every day and being able to be proud that my library, you know, devoted time and materials to really celebrate Mary Gardens in this really creative way.
And, you know, that sweet fragrance of beautiful blossoms is sort of synonymous with Mary. I think she's made her presence known often through the sweet smell of a floral smell. I know at in Assisi, actually, in the Porciuncola Chapel, there, if you smell the flowers as you're coming in, or that don't exist there, but if you have a beautiful fragrant smell, you know that Mary is present there.
Yes.
So, Katie, how do visitors experience this? Is there a recording that they listen to while they look at each one of the different flower beds?
They have, we have a self-guided tour, which is kind of a nice handout that has pictures of all the flowers and a little bit of information about the Marian name related to it. And then on the back, we also have information about the statues that are featured in the exhibit.
So you have multiple statues.
Yes, we have a Mary statue and also a Joseph statue.
Oh, I'm so glad you got Joseph has some plenty of plant life named after him.
Yes, So the day lily is St. Joseph's lily, and he's often depicted with a lily in his hand.
And Joseph's staff is the calla lily, I thought.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, Mike and I, you might have heard, Mike and I were trying, I was kind of teasing him. I was throwing some of these religious names out at him. But they do vary. A lot of the, I'm sure John Stokes has the definitive library of religious names ascribed to different flowers. But when you do the research, a lot of people kind of just name them themselves. They don't go to historical research.
Yes, there's a variety.
So what kind of direction do you give people as they're coming through? Because I'm sure once people see this, they think, I want to do this at home. I want to have something like this that I can have access to all the time.
Yes. So we strongly encourage people to pick up a complete exhibit planting list that we have in the gallery, and that's also available for download on our website. So they can see all the flowers that we had during the exhibition period, and maybe they can see which flowers would fit in with their, you know, plantings right now. And then we also are selling small eco cubes. They're little cubes of different Marian flowers, and it comes with a Mary statue. And that's through the University of Dayton bookstore. So
lovely.
Start a Mary garden, even starting with one plant and one Mary statue.
So, Katie, Mike and I were also talking about how do we use these beyond just the devotion to Mary? How do we use these as teaching exercise, teaching opportunities, teaching resources and tools for our children or for our friends?
Yeah, it's just a great way to reconnect with nature and learn more and reconnect, of course, with the stories from the Bible and of Mary. And we have found that it's been a great way to open our doors up to everyone in the Dayton community to come see what University of Dayton is and what we celebrate and what our mission is. So it's a great way just to learn more about reconnecting with nature and all those good things.
I've even heard of opportunities where people can create Stations of the Cross in their backyard or in a large monastery yard that represent each one of the stations represent one of the beds and the plantings represent one of the 14 stations of the Christ's Passion too. So they can be opportunities for us to dwell deeper into the mysteries of our faith and also to teach them about the Annunciation, teach our children and our friends about the Visitation. There's flowers that have all these stories behind them. How did these flowers get named, and how did those names get documented, Katie?
They were kind of named during the medieval times, and that is what John Stokes' research brought back and kind of reintroduced to an American audience. So all of his research online on our website kind of pulls back and showcases his research that he did from way back in the day when people were naming flowers and looking at all the different ways to name them to honor Mary and the stories that they knew.
Well, I love the fact that their faith and their beliefs were so on the forefront of their mind that if they saw a flower, they'd think, oh, this reminds me of the suffering of Jesus. The thorns remind me of the suffering of Jesus. I mean, that tells you how prominent faith was in their lives. And sometimes it takes a backseat in modern life because we have so many distractions, mm-hmm. modern distractions. So, getting back to the garden, which has always been a beautiful imagery for our faith, is really very healing and very nourishing and very edifying.
Yes. And during the spring planting, we did have tulips, and that means Mary's prayer. And just to kind of make the connection of the, what a tulip looks like and how it looks like praying hands.
Yeah. Katie, did you have any casualties in the garden? I mean, it would be kind of disastrous if you have it all set up and then, like in my garden, says, oops, that's not taken to the soil.
Right. Yeah. Well, thankfully, Grunder Landscaping, the company that we are working with, they come in every weekday and check on it and make sure nothing's out of place. And they have a great watering schedule. So it's been pretty pristine the whole time. And we're really thankful for that.
And no bugs in there either.
No problem.
This is a really dramatic exhibit. When it goes away on May 10th, what will you replace it with?
Well, we have gallery exhibits throughout the year. The next exhibit coming up is actually a calligraphy exhibit by a University of Dayton alum. But I also wanted to mention that the garden will live on in another building on campus.
Oh, good.
Some student artists have designed an indoor Mary Garden hallway for it's our admissions office. So these student artists have designed this hallway with the Mary Garden plants and feel in mind, and they're using some of the leftover flowers.
So excellent. The more I talk to you and the more I looked up about the University of Dayton, and I know Mike was agreeing with me, I'm really impressed by your university and the way you are perpetuating our faith and making the faith so alive on your campus. It's so impressive.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we're very proud here at UD.
Katie, do you find that some of the non-Catholics in your community come and enjoy the resources there, like the garden and some of the books?
Oh, definitely, yeah. We are very open campus, and people have come to see the garden just to see what they can learn from it. As you mentioned, it's a great educational opportunity.
Yeah. Awesome.
And we feel like our art and our books speak to all. So
great. Hey, Katie, if I can put you on hold for 1 second, we're going to take a caller and see what question they have for both of our guests today. Okay, can I put you on hold for a second?
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, so we're going to talk to Frank right now. Frank, who lives in Portland, Oregon. I don't know if Frank's a landscaper or a gardener, but he has a question for us. Hi, Frank. Welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Do you have a question for any of our specialists here on Mary Gardens and landscaping in general?
I did have a question. So I recently bought a house in Portland, Oregon, and there was no landscaping, so I'm trying to build a garden in the backyard, and I would love to have a Mary area or a St. Francis statue, but would love to know how to begin with that, and how to find out what plants will work in my area, because I know you're in Southern California, but some of those plants may not work in Portland, but there might be some that do better up here than down there in Southern California.
You get a little bit more rain than we do, I think, Frank.
We've been getting a lot more rain lately. So,
well, you bring up a good point, too. St. Francis is also a very popular image to have in the garden. So I'm going to toss that to one of our specialists here and see if they have an answer for you. Mike, do you have a response for Frank in Portland?
Sure. The first thing what you should do is find out what climate zone you're in, and you can find that on any garden website. You just type in your postal zip code, and it will tell you which of the 10 USDA climate zones you're in, and then from there you can pick which plant material will do well in your specific zone.
Okay.
Like there's things that you can grow in Oregon that would fry in Southern California in the heat, and vice versa. So that would be a good place for you to initially start.
Well, here's a question then for both of you guys. Would he start with the image or would he start with the garden? Would he find the statue and then build the garden accordingly, or would he build a garden and then try to find the statue that would complement that setting? What do you think, Katie?
I think finding the statue is a great first start to provide inspiration and see what flowers would fit around the statue.
Okay.
I agree completely.
Okay. Frank, did you get some good advice from our specialists here?
I did, thank you. And to find a statue, I should go to just a local nursery and see what they have, or should I try ordering online? I'm not sure where to start for that.
You'd probably find a better source of just going online, like look on eBay or whatever. The choices are endless, you know, limitless. There's just so many.
Or go to some antique shops or vintage shops, because I think the older ones are really cool rather than the maybe some of the contemporary ones you'd find in a modern nursery.
I agree. But they have more charm.
I don't have the degree that these guys have, though. Frank, thanks for calling. And call us back and let us know how your garden grows, okay?
Will do. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Frank. Well, Katie, I want to thank you for joining us. I'm going to tell you something. This is not the last University of Dayton is going to hear from me. I think you're a well-kept secret, and I want to know what other riches you have stored in that fortunate campus. Are you a graduate of the University of Dayton, Katie?
I'm not, but I have worked here for 7 years, and I love it here.
Ah, well, I think that's for good reason. Is there a lot of presence of the Marianist priests on the campus?
Yes, we have Marianist brothers and Marianist sisters, and a lot of them teach in the classroom, and it's just a great focus for our mission, and especially moving forward as a university.
Well, God bless you. Give out that website one more time for our listeners.
Definitely. Thank you. It's go.udayton.edu/Mary's Gardens.
Perfect. Okay. God bless you, Katie, and thank you so much.
You.
I wish I could get out there and see it in person, but I've enjoyed the pictures.
And if I can interject one thing here.
Sure. Yeah.
Real quick, I think for anyone interested in starting a Mary Garden, that their website has the most concise collection of information that anyone could ever want to know about starting a Mary Garden.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really coming from an authentic source because they also have all the information on Mary. So, so that follows. Okay, very good. Thanks, Katie. Hey, Mike, before we say goodbye to you, I want you to tell our listeners, at least our Southern California listeners today, about a really special tour that's going on that's benefiting a very important cause.
Yes. Right now in Southern California, we have the Mary Lou Hurd Memorial Garden Tour, which is this weekend.
It benefits something very special.
It benefits the Sheepfold, which is a Christian organization that takes care of battered women and their children in times of crisis. The garden tour is free. It expands from Long Beach all the way down to San Juan Capistrano. There is no tickets to buy. It is completely a free tour. You can go on the website at www.herdsgardentour.com.
And that's H-E-R-D-S.
H-E-A-R-D-S.
Oh, H-E-A-R-D-S. Yes. Okay.
And you can download all the locations of the various gardens, pick which ones you want to go see. The only thing they ask is if you make a donation from the heart, since there is no tickets to purchase, drop a dollar off at one of the garden, all of which goes to a superb cause that these people do to take care of displaced women and their families.
And it's a small contribution to make for seeing all those beautiful gardens that
Absolutely.
Have so much love in them. Well, we wish that garden tour the best of luck because it benefits a beautiful cause. Mike Kirsch, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It was really fun. I think there's a lot of people out running to their nurseries right now as we speak. So come back and join us again.
I will.
I wish you a fruitful spring and a blooming summer.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, so if you want to stay up to date on everything that's going on EWTN in our EWTN family, which is vast, and that includes what's going on in the television world, what's going on in the radio world, and also what's going on in the news world of Catholic news. There's always something going on. Join the EWTN family by joining into our Wings newsletter, so you can stay up to date on everything that's going on: books, art, CDs, DVDs from the religious catalog. You get blogs and news and events, and all you have to do is sign up for Wings. That's W-I-N-G-S. It's their weekly e-newsletter. So you can sign up for it by going to wings@EWTN.com. I know I'm part of the EWTN family, but I'm always learning so much about what's going on in different parts of the, I think Michael Warsaw, the CEO, has just been appointed very important position in communications position with the Vatican. So the EWTN family is broad reaching and it's making an impact on our faith.
Amen.
So you need to stay up to date on that. So sign up for Wings on the EWTN.com website. Okay. So now for our Chatting with Catholics segment, in keeping with our Marian theme for the show today, I took my microphone to a local parish here in the Diocese of Orange, Our Lady Queen of Angels, and I had a chat with the choir members after their weekly practice. Now, this is an exceptional church choir, and I asked them if they had any favorite Marian musical compositions, and this is what they shared with me.
Call Me Catholic. We're chatting with Catholics.
I'm walking into Our Lady Queen of Angels choir practice. Here, you can hear them in the background. Don't they sound lovely? I'm going to ask some of the choir members, after they've finished practicing, to share with me their favorite Marian hymn. Let's hear what they have to say. Maybe you'll learn some new ones. Okay, so Dr. Patricia Lamb, you are the choir director for arguably the best choir in the Diocese of Orange. And I would like to know, what are your favorite Marian hymns or pieces or instrumentals?
The first one that came to my mind was the Gregorian chant setting of the Ave Maria, which I love dearly. But I also like the motet on Ave Maria by Vitoria, the Spanish composer of the Renaissance. If I had it ready, we'd sing it for you right now.
You'd love it in front. One, two, three, and
hand it out.
Well, thank you. Those are beautiful. Those are beautiful offerings.
The Rachmaninoff is my favorite one. The Ave Maria.
Were you going to say that? You got some yes yeses in the background.
Yes, a choral piece, a lovely, rich, wonderful choral piece.
Can you hum a few bars?
No. It's too complicated.
I know that.
I have one. There's a Hail Holy Queen that we used to do at Mater Dei High School at the Marian Mass every year, and it was a variation of Hail Mary, but Hail Holy Queen, that version. That was a prayer that I learned with my dad, too. So that kind of held a special meaning in my heart. I don't remember who wrote it, but I just remember it was tied with high school and my dad. And
yeah, sometimes the ones we knew as a child or growing up sort of have a more indelible memory.
Right, because then it brings back memories of the high school mass and how I went to Mater Dei, Mother of God, and all that. So that's one in my heart, too.
Beautiful. So you went to Our Lady Queen of Angels Grammar School, and then you went on to Mater Dei High School. So you have a special relationship with our Blessed Mother.
Oh, very much so, and literally grew up at this church from womb to now, so very close relationship.
This is not a song, but there's a couple of us that are Spanish-speaking, and the Hail Mary in Spanish, I think, is more meaningful to me than in English, and it starts, Dios te salve, María, llena eres de gracia, el Señor es contigo, y bendita tú eres entre todas las mujeres, y bendito es el fruto de tu vientre, Jesús. And it's very colorful in Spanish.
It is very colorful in Spanish, and you say it with great meaning. Has it ever been put to music?
I don't know any pieces that I really like that have been set to music, but...
Well, the way you said it was very lyrical, so that's...
Yeah.
There's an Ave Maria that's written by Francisco Santiago, who's really a great Filipino composer, and it's just a really, really great Ave Maria. It starts with a violin, a real violin obbligato, and it goes into a wonderful Spanish-style Ave.
Is it vocal?
Gorgeous. Yes.
Can you give us a few? I don't think our listeners have any idea about this man's incredible voice. Come on. Something, a few notes.
Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum. Starts off something like that.
I'm swooning. No, that was spectacular. Thank you very much. Right off the cuff. Who would have guessed I could walk into this kind of talent?
Another pedestrian piece, Ave Maria, is the one that everybody who attends a nuptial mass knows, is the Schubert Ave Maria. And I think everybody knows that, even in the Protestant world. But certainly Catholics know that from wedding masses.
And it's traditional sometimes when it's being sung that a bride takes a rose or takes flowers over to the Blessed Mother and the statue there. Yeah.
I'm going to be completely pedestrian here and just say I'm going to go with a hymn that everybody knows. It was the very first song I remember singing as a child in church, and that's Hail Holy Queen Enthroned. And I cannot sing it ever without choking up. I feel Mary's love every time, and it's just overwhelming. It defines me as a Catholic.
Thank you. I'm glad somebody is coming up with the pedestrian selections.
One is actually Immaculate Heart Mary, and that's one of my favorite when I was growing up too. During May, when the Filipino culture, we offer flowers to Mary every single day for the month of May.
For the whole month.
All the kids, yes.
It's serious.
Yeah, it is serious.
Well, so. And Immaculate Mary is the one that has the verse, Ave, Ave, and they sing it at Lourdes through the procession.
Maria, Ave, Ave, Ave Maria. And then we carry letters, Ave Maria, to the altar, dressed in white.
Beautiful.
One of my favorites is an Ave Maria composed by Michael Upward. And I also would add votes for the Rachmaninoff. And it's an interesting piece to me, particularly because, as originally composed, the lyrics are, of course, in Russian, but we sing it in English. But a reminder of the connection between, you know, the Eastern Church and our church and part of the legacy.
Well, all five of my daughters are named Mary in some way. So Mary's very large in our house.
I guess.
And I'm, you know, an old Catholic. So I have to tell you, I do love the Arkadelt. A fellow named Arkadelt wrote this gorgeous Ave Maria. And I agree with Dr. Lamb about the Vittoria. And a lot of the old motets we used to do, they just are so dedicated to Mary. And anything in the Latin, I think, because Ave Maria sounds so much better than, not that Hail Mary isn't a wonderful thing to say. Dedication to Mary in our country, you know, we are under the sign of the Immaculate Conception.
Yes, we are.
And I think we need to remember how powerful she is in her wonderful motherly and womanly way. She's a great icon for women. And I think we need to remember that.
She is our symbol for feminism, right?
She absolutely is. She rocks.
Thank you, Our Lady Queen of Angels Choir. You really are a magnificent choir, and I happen to be biased to think that you are the best in the diocese. You never disappoint. Every holiday, you just deliver. Coming up next is Barbara McGuigan and The Good Fight, 2 hours of great conversation with Jimmy. How much time do we have left? You just put up 2-0. Is that 2 minutes?
20 seconds.
Oh, okay. Didn't want to cut anybody off there. So Barbara McGuigan is up next with The Good Fight. She's talking with Father Zachary Akers, director of the Fraternity of St. Peter. And hey, listen, don't forget to check out our Facebook page. We got pictures, we got podcasts, we got links to everything, and we want you to be our friend. So join our family, give us a like. But mostly tune in next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.